Welcome to Podcast on Fire 111, the episode which we've titled Cow. And it's pretty much for obvious reasons, but we'll talk about that in a minute. And my name is Kenneth Olsen, your host, and it's only one other person in the booth tonight, but it's none other than Hong Kong Dave, so say hi.
Hi, everyone.
Tom was supposed to be on, but life prevented him to be on a dopey little podcast tonight. life should always go first, regardless. So, you know, cow or life? I say life. You know. But this is, of course, the anchor show on the Podcast on Fire network. And you can locate that on the website podcastonfire.com. You can contact us via our email at podcastonfire@googlemail.com, and we have a discussion forum which is on that very site as well, podcastonfire.com/forum. There is, of course, via the registration, you get access to all the various forums for the various shows on the network, but also the members only archive where we put up exclusive stuff, cut conversations here and there that didn't fit into the flow of a particular show. What we used to do, and might go back doing, is to record exclusive movie reviews. For instance, during the Jackie Chan season show, we did a review of Thunderbolt, but just for the members only. It was always meant to be that. But since that lasted 20-30 minutes, and when we have one such scenario where we know it's going to last a few minutes more than just 30 seconds here and there, we'll put it up as a bonus episode on the website. An idea stolen from a number of podcasts, I believe. I mainly stole it from VCinema, who does bonus episodes. But as I said to Coffin John when I spoke to him the other day while recording Japan on Fire, we only steal from the very best. And that sort of lessened the blow, you know. Not that he got up in arms or anything, but I literally used the phrase I stole from you. I'll be stealing from the very best. I only do that and will continue to do so. But VCinema is more creative about it. They have like extra interviews and festival coverage and all of that. We just put up extra reviews, but that's in itself a pretty cool thing in my book. So we'll continue to do that. We have some pages on Facebook. We have the actual page where you can check us out and like us, facebook.com/POF network, as well as the discussion group, if you will, that you can find by searching Podcast on Fire Network, and that pops up the group as well as the page I just described. And you can also reach us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. I do writing and video reviewing on sites such as SoGoodReviews.com and SleazyKVideo.com. And I was very proud this past Sunday to put up the review of Ninja Terminator, one of the very best, if not the best, IFD cut-and-paste production by Godfrey Ho. It's absolutely brilliant. It's originally a Wang Jiang Lee movie that he shot in Korea. He has a blonde wig in it, if you ever seen that image of Wang Jiang Li. Without seeing the movie, you might have accounted that image. And that's mixed in with a ninja plot where Godfrey Ho has shot footage, and quite a lot of it compared to most IT movies, with Richard Harrison. It's a brilliant mix. It's when the mix was at its very best, where it all clicked, because the movie is hilarious, even in the Godfrey Ho scenes. They have creative stuff like toy robots delivering death messages on VHS. Yeah, baby!
Excellent.
And it's from the movie, and its dialogue inspired a YouTube video where this guy used the theme song from Thomas the Tank Engine and auto-tuned dialogue between Philip Coe and Richard Harrison on the phone, of course. So it becomes a song, you know. I have to destroy the ninja empire. And it's actual dialogue that he auto-tuned. It's brilliant. And that, my friends, I will contact that guy just because I'm kind. But that, my friend, will be the theme song for IFD on Fire.
Yeah.
And it concludes with, I want steamed crabs. And if you haven't seen that, David, I'm going to link you to that. That's brilliant work. You know, who thought of mixing? You know, speaking of cutting and pasting, you know, Thomas the Tank Engine You know, it's a cheery, happy song, and it's fucking Philip Coe and Richard Harrison on the phone with each other, talking about, you know, you have destroyed the ninja empire, and we must have the golden ninja warrior. Brilliant. So look out for that. IFD on fire coming soon. So that's basically my big update on my own site. I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/sogoodreviews. Podcast on Fire Network is, of course, on iTunes. So subscribe to us on there, rate us, give us feedback if you like. That always helps and is always encouraging. And you can listen to us on the go, stream us on the go via Stitcher, the application located at stitcher.com if you want to have it on your computer. And it's also available in various app stores on the most common smartphones, including the iPhone. Very good application. And just type in Podcast on Fire Network and add all the shows, so add whatever show you like individually. And speaking of more current updates, like I just provided with my site, what's going on Hong Kong Gig Guide on Facebook, David?
Yeah, I've added a few new shows today, some for February, some for March, and just got to get onto my regular weekly update today or tomorrow.
Right on. Is it a great task to gather this information? Do you have like a network of contacts that provide you with this, or?
Yeah, well, some of it I find myself, some of it is through, you know, my own sort of personal page and that, you know, a lot of my sort of Facebook friends are you know, in bands in Hong Kong, so I get, right, get like a, you know, regular invites sent out for shows, so.
Oh, cool.
It's a combination of both.
It's nice to be appreciated by the actual people you are pushing and promoting, you know.
Mm.
And I gather that this is mostly indie music, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. It's sort of, you know, the sort of Canto pop scene kind of takes care of itself. But, you know, if I can play a sort of small part in people maybe sort of listening to some bands that they might not have done, or maybe go to a show they might not have done, that's, you know... That was my reason for doing it in the first place. So, you know,
it's certainly no strain on you doing this.
No.
You like doing it, so
yeah,
so good on you for doing that. Tom is not here, but I'll always plug his review archive on our friends over at VCinema, VCinemaShow.com, and you can see in the show post for this episode the link to his review archive on VCinema Show. That is in 2012. We're going to grow either steadily or just a little bit, but he's writing. He's working on Enter the Phoenix, a review for Enter the Phoenix currently, Tom. But that's the contact information. Network updates. And it's only been a week since we last spoke of this, and not much has happened. But last week, what we did put up on Saturday was a show that initiated that the current structure, anyway, of the Anchor show that you're listening to, which would mean that we all, regardless of how many we are, even if there's only one participant, we all will watch a movie and review it together, and then take turns picking the movie. So I picked Asian Connection for the first episode. David has picked Cow for this episode, hence the episode being called Cow. Not a new concept, obviously, by any means. I've heard it on other podcasts. They do it this way, including The Cinema and The Gentleman's Guide to Midnight Cinema, I think, works this way. But I'm excited to have it this way for the moment, anyway. It means that make Ken watch a film is now make all watch a film, essentially. But so I encourage, you know, crazy selections and varied selections and whatever selection you have, as long as it... You know, I guess the rules are kind of that it should be Hong Kong, Taiwanese, Japanese, Korean, or Thai. You know, keeping it within that family, so to say. But we are an Asian cinema podcast, so that is, you know, in actuality quite a broad cinematic definition.
Mm. Yeah.
But knowing us, we'll keep it probably within those when all is said and done. And I might pick an IFD movie for you because it is, you know, Hong Kong produced international English language entertainment. You know,
so, yeah. I mean, there's a you know, a clear link.
Absolutely. So that was fun. You know, and the choice for last week, you know, Asian Connection with Danny Lee, Michael Chow actioner. It compared to this evening selection is obviously a contrast, so I'm glad to have already a varied selection and to have you guys on board on that on that concept. It's easy to do, and I'm rather excited to do it actually on a weekly basis. What do you think, David? I mean,
what do you think? Yes, I love the idea. I mean, it's great that, you know, everyone has a chance to pick a film, and, you know, and then it's sort of, you know, we get some different stuff in there, and, you know, different opinions. You know, it's no big deal.
No strict rules as such either. So, I mean, it could be very. It could be children's movies, could be very adult movies, and I of course, you know, if we venture into some very graphic territory and someone isn't comfortable with that, obviously we won't force anyone to watch any subject matter, you know. I'm not going to throw a rape movie at you and expect you to be comfortable with that.
I watch over the years of watching Asian film, I've watched pretty much every kind of film, so I'm for anything.
Right on.
Anything really.
We'll watch it. We'll be watching Cannibal Holocaust then, and study the animal cruelty.
I've seen
okay.
That. Yeah.
Okay. But that's not Asian, so we'll keep good film in its own right. Is my controversial opinion on that, but regardless. Some release dates: Japanifier 6-1, because we are planning multiple episodes on the director Mamoru Oshii. Coffee John taught me how to pronounce his name. It was always Oshii or Oshii, I thought, but no, Oshii. So mind the double I at the end, I guess. But that's just my naive, I'm naive. I don't know too much about pronunciation. But anyway, it's out mid-month, February 15th. And as I said, special guest V Cinema's Coffin John will be on there. Plus, there will be a bonus episode where we will review, and this might sound unconnected, we will review the Australian sci-fi movie In the Aftermath. But how it connects to Japanifier 6-1 on Mamoru Oshii, and is that we reviewed his anime Angel's Egg. What happened, how they connect, is that In the Aftermath it's a live-action movie that uses footage from Angel's Egg in a weird way. I don't know exactly in what weird way. I know beforehand it sounds weird. I'm going to watch it this Thursday. It's Tuesday now. It's just going to be mad to see who thought of the idea to mix a very abstract art house, not dialogue based anime, with a sort of post apocalyptic, as John said, Z grade sci-fi movie.
Say Z grade.
Yeah, not C grade, not B grade, Z grade.
Oh.
So we'll be record. We haven't recorded that yet. We will do this weekend, and it will be released at the same time as Japanifier 6-1. As a fun little aside, I'm looking forward to it. In the Aftermath, apparently called in German, if we translate the title literally, After the Rabbit. and that doesn't make sense with Angel's Egg either. It's not like a rabbit is in the egg or anything, so I don't know. So that'll be cool, so stay tuned to that. And the show itself was fun in its own right, but Japanifier 6-1, because of the subject matter in that movie, is one of our more serious shows, because it evokes a lot of biblical imagery. So we talk essentially of how we think he evokes that imagery, if it's too on the nose or if it's subtle, because there's very obvious links to Noah's Ark in that movie. A very interesting movie. I say I hate art house quite a bit, but it all depends on the art house, I guess. And that one I'm very receptive to, still, to this day. So I recommend that to you, David. If you can't find it, I think it's on YouTube in full, Angel's Egg.
Hmm.
And otherwise, there's a subtitle bootleg out there that if you can find it. Otherwise, I have that, because the official Japanese DVD is not subtitled. Even though there's not much dialogue, you still want to know what's going on when they do speak.
Yeah, it's not one that's gotten much kind of European distribution?
No, I don't think so. I mean, It's certainly never appeared English dubbed. Segments of it is obviously English dubbed, when the company who did In the Aftermath bought it, because it is a legal product. It was a fairly big, I think it's New World Pictures, which were at the time anyway fairly big, so it's not like they stole footage and made it their own. Even IFD was legal in that regard. People may have thought they stole movies from all over Asia, or unfinished movies, which was not true, they bought actual movies. You can identify the movies at points. You know, we could with the Wang Jiangli movie. It doesn't have an official English name. It's just based on a translation. But there is a Wang Jiangli movie out there that was finished and all of that and done in Korea. So it's all legal stuff. We will clear up in IFD on fire. You know, clear up myths and untruths out there that is circulating on the internet. But so stay tuned to Japan on Fire 3 coming February 15th. Director Series 3 has been done for many weeks now. Will premiere either February 29th or March 14th, depending on whether Rufus Duram, who has been on What's Korean Cinema, and Paul Quinn will be able to get together for the next What's Korean Cinema. And that will actually, it's not Memories of Murder, we will actually postpone the rest of Season 1, which is in total 6 episodes as per Stu's rules and guidelines. And we will jump to Season 2, which I was allowed to sort of bring in my choices. You know, it's Ken's What's Korean Cinema, but we will call it What's Korean Cinema. And, you know, his selections will resume. Now it's my selection, but really the first one is based on a Rufus recommendation and one I really enjoyed. It's a movie called Castaway on the Moon, which is a very quirky castaway movie, but this character commits suicide, jumps from a bridge in the city, and then lands on this little island in the middle of the city. He can't swim.
Yep. Any familiar names or faces?
Familiar. One of the co-leads in Welcome to Dongmakgol, the guy who's the North Korean general. Young guy. He's in this, but he uglies himself up quite a bit. You know, he goes method almost because he turns into a castaway on this little island. That's funny in itself. But the movie is not what you expect. And this very odd this odd girl who never leaves her house spots him with her binoculars or her telescope one day. And it's very really interesting. I really dug it. It's accessible too. And emotional. So I do recommend Castaway on the Moon. Expect some Korean kaiju in this series too. Because now more than ever, since Kim Jong-il is dead, we gotta focus on Pulgasari, the movie he produced, or rather, he was behind to the extent where he ordered the kidnapping of a director from South Korea to go to North Korea and make this monster movie for him. And it's called Pulgasari. Legendary and available too. I mean, there's a subtitled version out there, so you can watch it. And more than ever, very valid. You know, I guess it will be both a fun and sort of serious discussion because, you know, it's very wrong, the backstory. But it's kind of odd and cool that he was such a movie buff. Really a movie buff. He wrote books on making movies. It was his view on movies, Kim Jong-il. So, I mean, who knew? I think we will do Yongari as well, which is a South Korean monster movie. That's quite fun. It's not up there in terms of what Japan could produce, but it's fun in its own right. They did what they could with whatever resources they had. So Yongari is good fun. And on Korean cinema. And I will actually quote it just to get everything right. But if you remember, listeners, we had an episode up around about the beginning of March 2011 on Welcome to Dongmakgol, which was our contribution to the Korean Blogathon as hosted by newkoreancinema.com and sinawesome.com. And it will happen again. So let me quote something Rufus put up on SinAwesome. So, quote, following last year's successful Korean Blogathon, New Korean Cinema and SinAwesome will be hosting the event again this year from the 5th of March to the 11th of March. What's the Korean Blogathon? It's a way to try to encourage as many people, including you, David, sure, to share and discover opinions and ideas about Korean cinema. It's open to anyone, wherever you are around the world and whichever language you speak. So hopefully our podcast can be our contribution to the Korea Blogathon, which was very inspiring to see them work so hard and getting so many contributions that year. So we'll see what happens there. Regardless, we will do that What's Korean Cinema show. And rounding up what also is in the pipeline, we're planning Director Series 4 on Nam Night Choi, which will be the double bill of The Ghost Snatchers and Killer's Nocturne. So it's being researched currently, and we'll be recording in the next few weeks. It's no set release date for that one, and certainly no set recording date. And finally, next Vampire season is also in the final planning stages. The Ultimate Vampire, Spook Encounters 2 coming your way, and in bonus episode format, we have the Nick Sao Lam Ching Ying mashup, Gods Must Be Crazy Mr. Vampire mashup, set in Africa called Crazy Safari, where Lam Ching Ying rides an ostrich. And that's a sight in itself, and there's some surprising sights later in the film that I won't reveal now. The surprise shouldn't be spoiled, but they involve Nick Sao, the little bushman from The Gods Must Be Crazy, to a cool extent, making part of Hong Kong cinema, definitely. And also we have a mystery interview coming up, but it's a mystery for a reason. You'll know when the time is right. So that's network updates, plenty of stuff in the pipeline and to be released. So moving on to last movies watched, and it's not been long since we last spoke, in actuality, just 4 or 5 days, but what's been spinning in your players, David?
Well, my last movie watched is The Woman Knight of Mirror Lake. It's Herman Yao does the historical epic, which in this case means kind of a light hand on the exposition and history, and plenty of action. So, I mean, it kind of makes the historical accuracy, you know, somewhat questionable, because the real-life figures in the film, you know, they're sort of, you know, life and times probably not quite as action-packed as depicted, but, you know, it's still fun. It's not to say it couldn't be trimmed a little here and there. I mean, it could probably do with being closer to 90 than 120 minutes.
Whoa, yeah.
But I think it's about 114, 115, but it's a little long in places, but it's still quite good fun. Some really good Hong Kong vets in there. You got Pat Ha.
She hasn't done a movie for fucking ages, yeah. Pat Ha. It's like Princess D was her last movie, and that's ages ago as well.
Yeah, I mean, she's really, really good in this. You know, I mean, I've probably seen her in things and not realised it's her, but...
On the Run is the main example?
This was just... Yeah, I've got that, actually. Yeah. But I was really... aware of the name and aware of the face. I knew who she was, but it was really... she's really, really good in this. Very, very strong performance. You got Lam Sui in it as well?
Right.
He's in most things, but... Yeah. It was like a sort of a like a judge or a, you know, a magistrate or something.
Yeah. And has a funny hat, I hope.
Yeah, he does. And as it's a Herman Yao film, there's a good chance there's Anthony Wong in it, which there is in this one. he's more of a kind of a, you know, sympathetic figure in this, but also really 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 good.
Making a movie with his mate, essentially.
Yeah,
they're good friends and have been for a long time.
Yes, at least half a dozen for them, I think, probably now, isn't it? If not more.
Yeah, it feels like a dozen, to be honest. I mean, it pops up in most, and Herman Yao does many movies, as we know.
Yeah, I mean, it's solid stuff. I mean, the, you know, it's got a historical epic kind of thing. You know, not my sort of go-to sort of a film type.
Nah, not
but it's, you know, the way he handles it. It's solid. You know, like not untypical of Herman Yao's sort of output. You know, he can turn his hand to about just about anything, and you know, he does at least a half decent job. And he does that and more here.
Most of the time, it's pretty sufficient that he does a decent and half decent job, because Herman Yao seems to move on quickly.
Yeah.
From if he makes a third, then the next movie is probably pretty decent, and then the next a month or two later, there's a new movie coming out. You know, very much an admirable workhorse.
Yeah.
With a good attitude about it too. You know, he's a veteran, but certainly as an it's not a problem with making small quickies, and it can be hired to do bigger epics. This is certainly no hero in terms of epic, but
yeah, I mean, it's got a fair amount of scope and probably higher budget than the average that, you know, he usually gets to work with. Mm-hmm. But he's this versatile kind of guy. You know, if he gets asked to do something quick, he can. You know, there's a reason he gets asked to do it, because, you know, he's sort of a reliable director. You know, he'll get the job done. So.
How was he as a, did you have an actual conversation with him when you did meet him, or how were the circumstances when you did meet him in Hong Kong?
Well, I just had to notice him at the back of the crowd. You know, I recognised the face straight away. He's very sort of distinctive look. You know, long kind of shoulder length sort of dark hair, mm-hmm. And you know, eventually sort of plucked up the courage to go over and, you know, start a conversation. You know, I said I was just, you know, a big fan of his films and had watched them for years. But luckily, I had a Cantonese-speaking friend with me. You know, just was able to clarify.
I wouldn't think that would be a problem, because I know Herman speaks very good English, actually. Mm. But maybe maybe not at all times is comfortable with it. Who knows?
Yeah, he was very sort of amiable guy, more than happy to, you know, have a, you know, picture taken on that. So yeah, he's a, you know, nice guy.
And a fellow Slipknot, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, he seems to be into metal, not just judging by, you know, his hair, but you tend to see him in, you know, Iron Maiden shirt or Slipknot shirt or what have you.
Yeah, so. it's quite noted within Hong Kong and outside too, for, you know, for being a rock guy, you know, a rock mm-hmm. fan. So
and a good director. I do like him. I just have fallen, you know, I'm not followed like the last output of the last two three years maybe, because of my shift in focus. But I always enjoy watching whatever he puts out. I think the next to last I watched, which was really good, was the first Seventh Night.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It was a very unexpected ghost story / drama. It actually was rewarding by the end. It really, you know, it may have been category 3, but it was definitely not category 3 in that sense. It was not gory either, so I don't know exactly what made it category 3 other than language, possibly. But really unexpected, low budget, yeah, but rewarding ghost story, really. The first Seventh Night, one of the gems from the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of other Blu-rays get delivered today, which I'll be watching at some point soon. The Jeff Lau's East Meets West, 2011, yeah. which looks absolutely crazy. So, you know, I'm a big Jeff Lau fan, so, you know, I'm more than happy to check that one out. And Cash Chin's 33D Invader.
Yeah, not seen that yet, but King Hu gave it thumbs up, and apparently there's a feature on the Blu-ray or the DVD that, because Koso described it to me on Twitter today, that I think it was along the lines of that you can watch all the sex scenes and all the story cut out, with all the story cut out. And I said to him, wow, someone is caring for the presentation on home video and making, you know, having a laugh about it. Yeah. And even fucking... way back in the day when Cash Chin directed The Fruit Is Ripe or Swelling, the second one in that trilogy, right. They had one of the sex scenes was a multi-angle sex scene. Which, yeah, why not? And even, you know, this is early, it may are, you know, it's not early days of Hong Kong DVDs overall, and they put in a multi-angle sex scene, boring as hell, obviously, because, you know, just there's a reason you use editing, you know, and they cut to different cameras during any scene sometimes, you know. So it was not exciting as such, but I like the idea. It made me laugh, the idea.
I had a brief look at the extras. There's not a whole load, you know, the usual few trailers. But what makes it quite funny is they've got 3 trailers, and they appear to get progressively more explicit as they go on. So it's like a category one trailer, two, and then a three.
despite this being a category three movie anyway, so
it's quite odd to that. I watched it's essentially the same trailer, but there's just putting a few, you know, more scenes in the next one and then the next one, so.
And some happy face over the boobies or something, you know.
No, actually,
not even that. Okay.
No.
But it's gotten good reviews. I mean, that's what I like about Cass Chin, and he's had the touch for a number of years, going back to Eternal Evil of Asia and the Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks. He still got the touch that this movie got a good grade at, for instance, Love HK Film, where they recognized that it was a movie not aiming for much, but what it was aiming for was done really well. It was a fun movie. And that's not easy to do. That's not something you expect per default or automatic nowadays. So, Cash Chin Mankei, funny English name, but damn talented for as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, on the trailer, it's advertised as from the director of Sex and Chopsticks and Sex and Zen 2.
No, that's right. You're very right. Way back in the day. I like those fruity swelling, fruity ripe free. I like those movies. They're actually very, very sweet. The fruity swelling, as odd as this sounds, it is actually sweet, but because it is essentially an adults-only version of Big. Where, you know, but they don't go the route, thankfully, where it's girl in this case who wishes she was big and she becomes big adult, but she never has a sex scene with any already adult character in the movie, you know, because that would be rather edgy territory. But they never go that route. It's actually a very sweet movie. I like it. It's funny. It's obviously very graphic. It's category 3 rating, but via other characters and scenarios. Fruit is Ripe 3 was fun too. They aren't connected, but he has a touch for, you know, the sweet, actually. Crude filmmaker for sure, but I do recommend The Fruit is Swelling, definitely. And The Fruit is Ripe 3 is, as if you're interested in more of the kind of same, then that's priority 2 in that way. And Naked Poison is actually very good, the category 3 movie as well. Despite being made in the 2000s, he had the feeling still left, but he wasn't one of those directors that longingly wanted everything to be the same, like it was back then. That's why I liked the Forbidden Legend, Sex and Chopsticks movies, because they were done with sort of one foot in the 90s when this was big, a period sex movie, and one foot in, you know, 2008 and 2009, and sort of the polish of those days. And I really liked them. The first one is very light and goofy. Second one, because the novel dictates this, turns really dark and nasty. And the 33D Invader sounds like good fun.
Yeah, so I mean, not that familiar with that many of his films, but you know, from what you're saying, it sounds like, you know, quite a kind of quite a smart guy, quite a shrewd filmmaker. You know?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
He knows he don't kind of just do the same thing in the same way all the time. He's got to, you know, mix things up and try a few different things.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly more on the filmography that isn't category 3, but I think after all is said and done, he flourishes when doing this stuff. I mean, The Eternal Evil of Asia is fantastic. You're creative, too. It's not, you know, point-and-shoot stuff, this. And Sex and Sin 2, certainly legendary, even though I didn't like it back then. But that was before I was really into this stuff. I'm dying to rewatch it, actually. But, you know, it's creative. So 33D Invader, surprisingly not, as far as I know anyway, in 3D.
No, I don't think it was, no.
Which would have been, you know, suitable, but maybe not all not all movies, just because 3D Sex and Sin was successful, maybe not all productions felt they needed it or could afford doing it. So, you know, the title is certainly a genius in itself, you know.
Yeah.
For the 3D Invader.
The trailer makes it look quite fun, actually. Like quite a lot of humor there. So.
Yeah. And it apparently works, continues to work with seemingly a Western cinematographer. So he was credited on as cinematographer on the Forbidden Legend section Chopsticks, and this gentleman is called Ross Clarkson. So there you go. Apparently a partnership that is continuing. So I'm looking forward to it. I probably will cover it on my site eventually, but I'm in no hurry. But do let us know when you watch that.
Yeah, we'll do.
Anything else? Any purchases?
No, that's me. Pretty much done.
You're a bit reserved. You're not buying 20 Blu-rays in one go and putting them on the pile for 2 years.
No, I'm trying to take it easy because I've got my trip to Hong Kong coming up in 3 months. So.
Good man. And then you won't be returning with suitcases filled with clothes, but with Blu-rays.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Let's unpack. And it bursts open. You know, blue is falling down. I haven't watched anything since we last spoke. I've been busy. I've been kind of out of the swing of things. I haven't written for quite a while because the work has been so extensive on the podcast, but that's not a bad thing. It's not like this website, so good reviews won't be able to update. I've always had stuff in the pipeline anyway for these kind of moments because I've been watching a lot of stuff for a podcast, as I said. So really, the latest one I watched just because I finished, and it's not even Asian, but I'll mention it for a minute. I finished listening to the audiobook of the fourth Harry Potter book. I finished listening to it. So I watched the movie. And in short, I'm fucking glad I listened to the books before because the movies are really, quick cliff note versions of the books. Because she expands those fucking books. And the movies are having more and more difficult time, dealing with that. Of course you can cut out certain stuff, but even, the cool, crucial stuff in the movie, in the books rather, I wanted more of that in the movie, but they're fine. They're good fun. So I listened to a fifth book now. I'm a very impatient reader. Highly impatient reader. That's why I like listening to audiobooks instead. And I'm listening to the ones that are narrated by or read by Stephen Fry.
Yeah.
But I think the American versions are read by a British actor anyway, Jim Dale.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, so I think he's British anyway.
Yeah, it was in the...
Something.
Oh, yeah. I can't think.
Actually. Whatever. Fuck it. So I'm getting into the swing of things. I have still some stuff, obviously for work, as we've discussed, but I have some movies for research that are sort of vaguely connected to Asian cinema that are on my pile. So I'm watching No Retreat, No Surrender 3. Blood Brothers, Lauren Avedon and Keith Vitale. I've only seen the first one. I'm pretty sure they don't connect to such, but the first one is fantastic. Fantastically cheesy, of course, but who can complain? It's fucking Yung Kuei directing. Bruce, who is it? Fucking Lai? Is playing the ghost of Bruce Lee in it? Wonder Bruce's. And Jean-Claude Van Damme in a great breakout performance and just some fantastic moments in No Retreat, No Surrender. But the obvious one, the final, No Retreat, No Surrender! And then Kurt McKinney, springs into action during the ending. But what I like most in No Retreat, No Surrender 1 is when Kurt McKinney calls Jean-Claude Van Damme Russian. Remember that? And then Jean-Claude Van Damme, the ultimate insult. Russian. I fucking love that. It's just so sincere. So I don't know what 2 is like. So I'm jumping to 3 for a reason that I'll reveal sometime later. I'm watching it for work just to make some notes on the film. Is that a series you followed at all, aside from the first one?
No, I can't say that I have.
Are you even a fan of these American-made martial arts movies?
I've seen plenty.
King of the Kickboxers, American Kickboxer.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
I think I've seen most of them. I'm not sure I'd necessarily say I was that great of a fan, but I've watched plenty for sure.
Yeah, that one has only a very slight Asian connection. The next one in the pile, in regards to that research, is Blood Moon, with Gary Daniels, directed by Tony Leung Siu-Hung, great action director of I worked on Ip Man, Young Ip Man, and a bunch of stuff.
Does that have Darren Shalhoub in it as well?
I think so, yeah. He was credited anyway. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know to what extent. But Blood Moon with Gary Daniels, so...
Yeah.
Seems like a horror movie, based on the feeling I got from it. But, having Tony directing, you know, internationally is pretty cool. And he's not recognized enough. Speaking of directors that are not recognized enough, Tony Leung Siu-Hung. He's the guy who did Insanity that I spoke of on the commentary with Raymond Wong having sex with Cathy Chow and all that. Rosa Vendetta is a great horror action movie. Tinges of Silence of the Lambs. And he action directed A Magic Crystal, which has always been recognized for its great action, hard action, too. And obviously had some great Western talent in that one. Cynthia Rothrock and Richard Norton and Andy Lau really getting into the action. So... I'm looking forward to that. I really dig Tony's work. So those are sort of next in the pile for work. And then obviously we'll launch into to either the director series next or Vampire Season after that. And that will sort of dictate my viewing habits. But I'm trying to get back into the swing of things with my own writing. I've just fallen a little bit out of that due to the work commitments at the podcast. But I'm happy to do so. I'm not stressed out or anything.
Cool.
Definitely not. So that's me, and we'll therefore have a little break and return with the feature subject of this podcast, the feature review of Cow. Welcome back, and the episode is called Cow, and therefore we're going to review the movie Cow. And I'll let David, since he picked this one, tell us the basic things and the plot about Cow. So, go ahead, David.
Yeah, Guan Hu's 2009 film Cow details the story of New Er, played by Huang Bo, who returns home to find his village has been destroyed by Japanese soldiers. With his village's special dairy cow, the only survivor, you know, man and beast joined together through circumstances not of their choosing. Hmm. With such an unusual story and a setting of a brutal winter in the second Sino-Japanese War, you could be forgiven for, you know, dismissing the film as a cinematic Frankenstein's monster, but. But that actually serves the film well, because I think it gives it a lot of space in which to work. Mm. So, I mean, it's one of the reasons I like the film anyway. And lead Huang Bo shared Best Actor Award with Nick Chung, who won it for Beastalker, or one half of it, at the 2009 Taiwan Golden Horse Awards. Mm. And director Guan Hu was also awarded Best Screenplay Adaptation Award at the same ceremony.
Yeah, the adaptation award certainly suggests that it's either a story he adapted or if it's based on a book or something like that. I don't know. But, shared Best Actor Award. Wonder why they couldn't decide. It doesn't happen. It's not a common thing necessarily. Yeah. Good on them for awarding, you know, good work. Certainly Nick got a lot of acclaim, rightfully so, for Beast Stalker.
Yeah, he was good in that.
Yeah, he was really good. Far cry from Asian Connection, you know, as we spoke about last week. You know, he was good in Asian Connection, but, you know, very much a different Nick Chung. Younger and different. Okay. So your first, I should warn, I don't have much to say really, but I'm curious to hear your basic opinion first, unless what you just spoke of actually was your basic opinion, where you talked about the film being a Frankenstein's monster, or what do you want to lead with in terms of first?
I like the way it starts It starts from the Nua being in the village, and you know it's completely devastated, and then they cut back and forth between sort of, you know, current times and, you know, dealing with the village and, you know, as it is now.
Yeah, it's like a challenging structure that way. Yeah. It's a flashback structure all throughout the film, kind of.
Yeah, and I like the way, you know, it sort of, because it sets up the, you know, village and its relationship sort of to it and the people in it as it was, and, you know, and then shows you the contrast, you know, with it as it is now. And it just kind of, you know, goes back and forth. So you're kind of doing the two sides of the film at the same time.
Right.
Which sounds a bit odd, but it kind of, I like that. I think that works for me.
I mean, when done, that you can really play with the audience in that regard. Just look at the way Quentin did for a few of his movies. You know, that's not simple flashback. That's all over the place, and yet you still keep it together. So, I mean, it's all about the skill in terms of putting it together, and then you make the audience understand, even if you take them really for a ride. I should say, I don't like this film. but perhaps I genuinely am getting dumber as each ninja movie passes by, but perhaps mainland cinema of some variety isn't for me or for me anymore, because I thought it was almost entirely forgettable. But since I said what I just said, with me feeling I'm getting dumber by every ninja movie that passes by, that's pretty much true. To be honest, I can't really recap what it was doing, what it was about, kind of what it was about, what it was trying to say. It's really slow, and I appreciated it being slow, but after a while, it's almost entirely abstract to me. Aside from some amusing imagery in terms of the Huangbo and Cao interaction, obviously, but also some harrowing imagery. You know, obviously the war imagery. It was, at the beginning, it looks like he encounters sort of a mass grave almost, which certainly evokes some pretty horrific real life imagery throughout the ages. But I'm this didn't reach me. But I'm not the kind of viewer that I'm saying. I'm kind of two minds here. I obviously am honest enough to say I thought it was a bad film, but I'm also, it's not really fair to say when I didn't get it. There was so much that passed me by that it seems unfair to say it was entirely badly done. It's just, so I'm in two minds there. I thought it was bad, but I was unwilling to say that it's probably not for me either. You know what I mean?
I mean, I haven't seen a whole load of mainland films. I mean, certainly not anywhere near the number of Hong Kong films.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in terms of mainland films, I've never seen a similar, you know, or even a sort of broadly sort of comparable mix of kind of light and dark elements. And, you know, and it makes me want to see more mainland films, not because, you know, I feel like sort of need to or have to. You know, because, you know, I want to, you know, just, you know, out of a genuine interest. And, you know,
I can't think of anything that is like it either, but I do really like this when it's all village set. I always like that. I mean, if I would therefore pass on any recommendation based on a movie that is set in a village, it's Zhang Yimou's Not One Less. It's a fantastic movie, almost an entire cast of children. It's about this 12-year-old girl who's asked to be the substitute teacher for this class, and she's asked to, you know, everybody needs to be in the class and accounted for when the teacher gets back, hence Not One Less. I like that, but I'm not exploring it anymore, really, to be honest.
I mean, it's still, entertainment, sort of more typical entertainment films are still much more my thing. But this, it's kind of stuck with me. It's like, it's certainly my most watched mainland film, for sure. I mean, I've seen you know, I've seen a few, you know, but not a whole load that I've returned to more than sort of, you know, once or twice. But this is it's certainly one of them, and sort of
one way the most kind of not gimmick, but it certainly stands out. You know, it's called Cow, and it's about a cow and war.
and the sort of the way they handle the humour is one of the things I really like about it, because it's humour born out of situations, mm-hmm. rather than, it's not, you know, they're not gags, they're not jokes. It's humour, you know, born out of a situation, and as such, it feels quite organic. It doesn't mm-hmm. seem out of place, you know, entirely. It's obviously a contrast, but it doesn't feel out of place for me with, you know, the more sort of serious aspects of the film, you know, the sort of wartime, you know.
I like exactly that setup, you know, and there's certainly, I don't think anyway, for it to be understood, a need for a study on the Sino-Japanese war or anything. It seems like, you know, land is bleak, it's infected by war, and that's essentially all you need to know, because it's a very restricted story, you know. It's I of course like the decolored look, you know. It's suitable for a land with this harsh climate, you know, winter climate. It's not snowy, but most of the time anyway. But, you know, it's a land kind of drained of life at this time, and then there's war as well, you know, draining the life out of the land. And there's nothing wrong either with, you know, jolting your audiences early, and that's, you know, the connection to those harrowing war sites pretty early on. It's not graphic as such, but, you know, you're certainly, ooh.
Yeah,
you know,
it's quite...
It seems a pile of dead villages.
Yeah, it's quite disturbing, one of the things that's worth noting, I think, about it is the contrast in this between this film and its sort of, you know, relatively multifaceted, I suppose, depictions of Japanese military. Mm-hmm. You know, because this is a mainland production, and, you know, they're sort of, you know, they're not Japanese. Soldiers aren't shown to be all sort of, you know...
They are evil personified, yeah, and then some, you know, usually in these movies.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, you know, there's some, you know, characters that are like that. And, you know, there's one Japanese soldier that essentially, you know, saves the cows, you know, alive. He sort of, you know, he diagnoses the health issue. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's you can contrast that depiction, or, you know, the sort of varied depiction of the Japanese military with you know, films that are made sort of elsewhere, mm-hmm. and made with an eye to the mainland market, where it's usually a bit more one beat.
The war, the sort of truths of war as told by each respective side, usually in history, is always, you know, very much different, you know. Mm-hmm. Japanese have their view. For instance, the mainland Chinese have their view of what happens, especially when it came to war atrocities, obviously. Yeah. I mean, Nanking is such one such example, or I think there will never be a sort of a joint opinion of what really happened, but there's certainly proof out there in history. And having said that, I think what I heard of, you know, speaking of Nanking in a movie, I'm looking forward to watching City of Life and Death, the mainland movie about the Nanking Massacre. Yeah. That apparently has a balanced depiction as well, because it obviously will feature the Japanese. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm thinking it seems like they're getting more intelligent, the filmmakers, and allow for a clear and honest depiction of each side, and not just, you know, extremely evil and extremely patriotic and great Chinese and vice versa.
Yeah, it's a bit more... it's a bit closer to the, you know, to the truth, really. You know, the truth never usually like one extreme or the other. It's usually somewhere between the two. The final scenes of the film, not to give anything away if anyone ends up tracking it down, but the final scenes, I sort of, in an unconventional way, I find that it's really really quite. Quite touching, and I like the way they kind of just kind of bring this story to a conclusion. It's just sort of,
it's strange, I think, but at that point I'm I had no clue what was going on. I'm sure that sounds stupid, but I obviously noticed certain scenes. You know, the big scene with the cow during battle. I won't reveal what it is, but I had no idea what I was looking at, and it was strange. Like, it was slow for the first 30 minutes. I get that, but you know, hopefully a reward at the end of the rainbow. Even sometimes the very end beat of a movie will sort of make the circle complete. So some movies you need to stick with. But I certainly don't say no to a fragmented storytelling that uses the flashback structure again. But you know, I couldn't fill in the dots, and it didn't capture me for some strange reason. I really wanted to like it because, obviously, contrasting what seems like a goofy story about a man and his animal, and it's a cow, and the posters are really seem like they're really upbeat. You know, there's one poster where, you know, the cow comes at you like it's fucking 3D or something, you know? and with obviously the ring in his nose, you know, great. But for instance, one thing I didn't get, it was not like it was the aspect that made me dislike the film, but I couldn't for the like of me figure out why both the villagers and the Japanese seem to treasure the cow so much. You know, what was it, do you think, like, because it will provide milk, and that's certainly something that is not very available during this time, or do you think it's a respect for the animal that it is, especially since they said it was a foreign animal? Do you think the Japanese respected it because of that too?
I don't know. I didn't quite get that sort of aspect of it. I know it was gifted to them, and I think, you know, it was a sort of a European sort of breed, and it was like really big and could, you know, give loads of milk, and you know,
I certainly got why the villagers wanted to you know, one of the best and funny scenes and concepts is that they paint it so it appears Chinese, you know. So someone said, I know how to paint it to make it look Chinese, and it looks really shit, you know. Yeah. Just have, you know, yellow paint slapped all over it. That is funny. And his entrance is great too, you know, the cow's entrance is obviously great.
There's scenes where he's trying to sort of, he's trying to wash the paint off with a, you know, throws a bit of water on there and gets a straw. And
it gets nothing, you know. You know, so I like those, you know, that quirky side to it, but you know, it seems like the movie indulges in I'm not saying indulging in sort of a negative way, but there is a lot of humor within even serious moments. But I'm looking at it, I'm seeing like it isn't tickling me, and the story isn't clear to me, and I stuck with it obviously, but it was oddly frustrating. And but having said that, as a kind of final tally, I joked about it at the top that I'm getting dumber as every dumb movie passes me by, but I watched Angel's Egg for the Japan on Fire podcast, and that's a difficult movie. The characters are saying absolutely nothing at points. The first 20 minutes, you know how many lines of dialogue is in the first 20 minutes of Angel's Egg? One. And it's the dialogue, "Who are you?" And it's all atmosphere and abstract atmosphere, and yet I got a lot of interpretation out of it. So I'm pretty sure I'm not getting very much dumber anyway. Watching, you know, toy robots deliver death messages on VHS, it's not hurting me. But unfortunately, it didn't turn around for me, that story design. I was hoping even 1 minute, 1 hour, 10 minutes in, that okay, it's half an hour left. Come on, but maybe it's more simple than in actuality. It's a very simple story in actuality, but it just didn't reach me. And it's not, and it's a mix of that, and I don't think it's thoroughly for me either.
Yeah, I mean, not one of my absolute favorites, but I return to it from there's enough in it for me that makes me sort of return to it every sort of now and again. Probably my favorite single scene, if I had to pick one, there's a scene where Nua sort of is mediating between sort of a Chinese and Japanese soldier.
It's a pretty intense scene.
They're sort of, you know, they're either side, and is in the middle with the cow. It's quite. I do like that one. But
is that the one towards the end where they have guns?
And they're kind of up on the kind of up on a kind of a sort of cliff edge.
Yes,
I think. But yeah, the the DVD of the film that I have is a mainland release, and there's been no Hong Kong release that I know of. There's a couple of different mainland releases. One
really no Hong yeah. Kong release either. Fucking hell! I mean, no. Normally mainland movies have a distributor in Hong Kong, and it ends up being on a good DVD. Edco, I know, does that a lot, but well.
Yeah, it's
not even for home video. I mean, I wouldn't blame them for not putting it out into the cinema, but not even video.
No, it's played a couple of you know, local festivals, I think, in Hong Kong. At least one, I think. Mm-hmm. And but yeah, I mean, a couple of mainland releases, one with and one without English subtitles. Mm-hmm. I picked it up when I was in Hong Kong last. You know, thanks to Ross from lovehkfilm.com. And, you know, incidentally, like, sort of penned, a very astute review of the film on his site, which, it's really like a sort of, kind of chimes to a large extent with my own sort of view of the film. I mean, it's not, I like it. It's not a light-hearted sort of thing, and it's not one of those kinds of films that I go to watch if I'm looking for a bit of fun, but mm-hmm. I get enough out of it that I return to it from time to time.
I like movies with naked topless tennis matches shot in slow motion. I'm looking at one now. I'm probably going to pick that, reveal that to be my pick in case Tom isn't able to make it the next time. I know he has a pick in the pipeline, but I'll reveal what my pick is. I'm looking at it now. Naked topless tennis matches. But I'm going to mention one scene that I did find funny, one of the best scenes there. I'm not sure exactly what happened in the scene, but there's a scene where the cow just is squashing, Nia's foot. He can't get out. It's that classic, scenario where he stomps on Nia's foot and he refuses to move it. Nia is, he's struggling to, he can't scream, obviously, too, otherwise he would reveal his position. But and certainly there's a determination here in the character that is admirable, that Huang Bo's energy in the acting and helps. His devotion to the character, and the character certainly devoted to fulfilling his promise to the village and all of that. And that's not a bad thing, but I wouldn't say too long, like King Hu fought, but definitely boring and for me personally. But I wouldn't recommend anyone to pick it up if they're curious. Don't listen to me, absolutely not. Just telling it like I see it.
So. Yeah, I mean, that's all good. I mean, I think it's actually, it's often more fun. Certainly, I sort of listen to podcasts and, Podcast on Fire and other podcasts where people will actually disagree on a film. I actually find that more fun to have sort of differing opinions.
We never aim for, but perhaps there will be a movie sometime where, for instance, I can't accept your opinions. So I think you're idiots. What's the matter with you? So if you fucking think like Chungking Express, right. Which would be kind of redundant because we kind of done that for the show already once upon a time. But that's a movie that just annoys me if I think of it.
Okay, it's a good deal I didn't pick that one actually, because I do actually really like that.
Yeah. Good on you, but shame on you at the same time. You know what I mean?
not massively a whole load of. One car away, but that something about that one. I did actually get to see it in the cinema, and back when it got a release over here. So mm-hmm. kind of got an attachment to it from that, really.
Right on. Okay, well, we'll have two picks sort of in the air. One that you will know of now, and one that you will know of once the show hits. Because if Tom can join us next week, he has a pick ready, and that will go first. But I'll have a reserve, a substitute pick, and that will be, speaking of topless tennis matches shot in slow motion, we're of course gonna watch Challenge of the Tiger, starring Bruce Lee. Directed by Bruce Lee and co-starring Richard Harrison before his IFD days. Bruce Lee fights a bull as well. Yeah, baby.
It's a connection from a cow tub.
It's a kind of a variation of the famous Street Fighter X-ray shot in Street Fighter. They have that in that bull scene as well. I mean, it's great. Topless tennis matches in slow motion and Bruce Lowe fights a bull. Sold. And it's on a double bill DVD with For Your Height Only. Starring that, I think it's called Wei Wang or something like that. The Filipino actor, the short Filipino actor. Which is supposed to be a really good, fun film too. So maybe we'll pick that some other time because it's on the same DVD as The Challenge of the Tiger. I love double bill DVDs. It's too rare nowadays. I've never was old enough to sort of experience, you know, a double bill in a theater or anything like that. And contrasting double bills too, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The whole concept, the whole thing of the double bills here in the UK kind of started to die off just before I was able to sort of get into the sort of cinemas. Mm. I kind of remember them as a youngster, but yeah. I can imagine they put on Hammer films
and stuff like that. You know, a double bill of some Hammer films, for instance, you know, back in the day. Yeah. You know, then they probably would be connected, you know, because if they put on a double bill of Hammer films, then they would put up like two of the Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee movies, maybe.
Yeah.
But we'll do Challenge of the Tiger, and if Tom doesn't come on the show next week. And I know Mike Leader really loves Challenge of the Tiger, so... I'm sure he'll be happy to hear us talk about it. Okay, dokie. Podcast on Fire 111. Cow is nearing the end of it, but it's end. But we'll run through the contact information really quick again. And you, of course, have been listening to Podcast on Fire, the anchor show on the Podcast on Fire network, whose website is podcastonfire.com. Our email, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. Our message forum, podcastonfire.com/forum. Free registration gives you plenty of extra stuff from the shows from the past, but you don't need to register to listen to the bonus episodes that will be on the website. But if you are listening to us via iTunes or Stitcher, you won't be able to listen to the bonus episodes. You can only download those from the site. We also have two little endeavors on Facebook: our regular page, facebook.com/POF network, as well as the discussion group that we just started, essentially maybe 2 months old, but still just started it. And you can find it by searching a Podcast on Fire network in the search box on Facebook, and that will pop up. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/podcastonfire. And you can see various IFD reviews and Hong Kong Horror reviews, Category 3 reviews, amongst other things, on SoGoodReviews.com and SleazyKVideo.com. Those are my sites. And you can follow me on Twitter as well, twitter.com/SoGoodReviews. Rate us and subscribe to us on iTunes, and listen to us on the go if you feel that it's a better experience for you with the application Stitcher. Stitcher.com on your computer or your smartphone. And Hong Kong Gig Guide is on Facebook as always. You don't have a firm URL for Hong Kong Gig Guide, yeah? You just need to search it.
Yeah, it pops up. Just search Hong Kong Gig Guide, and by the time people are listening to this, I'll probably have another update or two. So,
right on. Do you have a firm like a day you do updates, or you do updates when they?
It's usually midweek, but you know, as often as not, there'll be little bits here and there. Other days as well, but it's usually kind of midweek.
Cool. And of course, Tom's reviews on thecinemashow.com you can look at by clicking the link in the show post of this episode 111, which is concluded right about now. So I've been your host, Kenneth Wilson, and with me was Hong Kong Dave.
Bye, folks.